You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Hi, I'm Mike Peskin for Leonard Lopate on WNYC. In the 1990s, Julia Sweeney spent 4 years as a cast member on Saturday Night Live. She was Pat Riley, not the basketball coach, the man who might have been a woman who might have been a man. It seems like a one-joke premise when I say it, but let me tell you, there was a lot there. Or maybe it was just a really, really good joke. After SNL, Sweeney wrote and performed the monologues God Said Ha, which chronicled her battle with cancer while her brother, Michael, was dying of cancer. And then came Letting Go of God, her investigation into the nature of faith. Spoiler, faith does not win, or at least conventional God does not.
I love that you're saying it like that.
Her latest project is the essayist diaristic book, If It's Not One Thing, It's Your Mother, from Simon & Schuster. She catches us up on the last several years of her life, her daughter getting married in that order. I'm delighted to welcome her back to the Leonard Lopate Show. Thank you for coming back.
Thank you so much.
So it all began with a pillow, an embroidered pillow.
Well, that's sort of how I frame the book. But my mother gave me this pillow that said, if it's not one thing, it's your mother on it. And she thought it was hysterical. And I thought it was so not funny. And I kind of hid it away in a closet and only brought it out when she was visiting. Then I adopted my daughter, Mulan, and I immediately thought it was hysterical. And I put it on her bed. See, I think it's only funny if you're putting it on your daughter's bed.
Uh-huh. So humor isn't comedy plus time. It's truism plus offspring.
Right, exactly. And then Mulan came to me when she was 7 or so and said, this pillow is not funny in any way. I don't want it in my room. And so I just thought it was this funny thing about the pillow.
Okay, why was it you don't really have to answer this. I get why it wasn't funny. At first, embroidered pillows aren't the greatest source of humor.
With yeah. sayings on
I actually was looking up some embroidered pillows online.
You were?
Yes. Teachers are some bunny special. Oh, we're happy to see all our guests, some when they come and some when they go. And the description of that one was a lighthearted, funny pillow that your friends and family never take seriously. I really hate when you take a pillow seriously.
I know.
But your actual literal explanation for why that wasn't funny, I thought was kind of interesting at first.
Well,
you thought.
The reason why, and actually now I'm not even sure. At the time, I had just left Saturday Night Live. And even though I had left on good terms, I just felt slightly wounded by it. I just felt like I had... You know, anyway, I just left the show, and I thought my mom picked the pillow because it was close to the phrase that Gilda Radner had said, if it's, you know, it's always something. You know?
Yeah.
If it's not one thing, you know, it's another. And I thought it was kind of, I felt like she was too into that part of me being on the show. Or people, like, even in my own family were so into me being on Saturday Night Live, and I was kind of over Saturday Night Live, and I didn't want to get pillows that even seemed like phrases from Saturday Night Live.
Right, right. You have to realize there's, I mean, I don't know your mom, but it seems to me a very small chance she was thinking of Saturday Night Live.
No, she wasn't.
Pillow. There's no,
no, no
way.
No, yeah. No, I was totally wrong in that way. I was just overly sensitive at that moment.
Right. And so it's like when you break up with a girlfriend or a boyfriend and your whole family and everyone's like, oh, what about John? He was such a nice guy. You're like, I'm over John.
I know. Don't
you, in your case, Joe. You name all your boyfriends
yes,
Joe.
In
yes,
in the book, yes.
So I'm over Joe number 9 and I'm on to Joe number 10. I get it. And so why did it become funny when you gave it to your daughter, do you think? Or maybe she is right.
I think
it's still
because
not funny.
It's funny when it's a reflection on you. It's sort of the same. I said... Like I say in the book, that my mother may as well have given me a pillow that said, my mother is a classic narcissist and all I got out of it was a stupid pillow. And I feel like I assumed that narcissistic mother position. Like, here's this funny pillow that's really a joke about me. But really, it's sort of we're ribbing each other about it.
So were you on some level proud that your daughter recognized the unfunniness of the pillow? I mean, I'm sure humor is important in your family. You talk about how sometimes she doesn't laugh. She does the comedian thing, which is funny. That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, funny.
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 Yeah, it's true.
Funny.
It's true. I think she didn't think it was funny for the same reason I didn't, actually. Because I think it's an even deeper reason. It's really the pillow's about the mother, not about the kid.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. Just like the Some Bunny special is not about the teacher. It's
yes,
about the
exactly.
student who said Some Bunny. So the adoption process, I find these stories very interesting. Yours had a wrinkle that I didn't know about. Mulan was adopted from China, and right before the adoption went through, they come to you frantically, and they said, we need to ensure that you're not gay.
Right.
It was, what?
I know. So I get all these messages on my answering machine at home. This is long ago enough that I didn't have a cell phone, actually. And I come home to all these messages, And they say, you have to send a letter saying that you're not gay or no gay. That's how they phrased it. Signed by you and another person. And it has to be notarized. And it has to be a person who's known you for more than 10 years.
Right.
So they've known you over 10 years and they're saying you're not gay.
Or in that time, you know,
yeah,
who knows
in that
about
time.
Experimentation in college. Yeah,
exactly.
But. There's an intervention and they say you don't need the letter.
Yeah, so then the last message, so while I'm listening to all the messages I'm going through, like who would, like first of all, this is ridiculous. Should I say no, I refuse to do it? Would that stop the adoption? Well, who would I ask? Well, how would someone even know? Well, I guess I'd have to ask an old boyfriend. And then I thought it would be funny to call up an old boyfriend and say, I guess I'll prove to you that I'm not gay. To get them to sign it as a joke. And then the last message I got of this series of messages was, okay, Miss Sweeney, we never got letter from you saying that you're no gay, which I love. They kept saying no gay, but we just went ahead and assigned you somebody
because they found some evidence. This is the thing that struck me. They found some evidence that you had been married.
Yeah,
right?
I had been married before and divorced, and they said, so since you've been married before, you're probably not gay, which of course is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Every aspect of it to me was hilarious.
I think maybe the kind of person who would ask for the notarized statement might, you know, fall into that line of thinking. But here's maybe it wasn't clear from the book. I don't know if you told them that or somehow they searched it out and found out that you had been married before.
What I think it is, my adoption facilitator, Norman in Los Angeles, who's great. I think he was sitting around with them while they were waiting for me to send this notification in. And then he said, well, you know, she's been married before. I think he just kind of nudged them in that direction.
Because I had this idea in my head that they had done an internet search, right? And somehow found that and not the fact that if you look for Julia Sweeney, you will find her most associated with a character of indeterminate gender.
Right.
So what if Pat came up? What would
they
have done then?
I don't know what they would have done. I really don't know. It is a completely crazy process. Like how they... And I'm kind of feel for them. How do you determine? Like, how do you know
not
if it's
that way?
Like, I mean, whether someone's going to be a fit parent or
right,
not.
Right, right.
Anyway.
I understand. So then you have this lovely daughter, and her name's Tara, or maybe you would pronounce it Tara. But in fact, no one's pronouncing it because she doesn't want to be called that.
So I get this kid, and her name that they gave her at the orphanage when she arrived at a few days old was Mulan. And then... So I expected that she would have some really difficult, hard to pronounce for the usual American tongue name, that it would be clear that you would change that name.
Yeah.
But her name is Mulan. And there's the Disney film Mulan. And I'm thinking, Mulan's a beautiful name. It means strong and beautiful. Mu is strong. Lan is beautiful. But I can't have a daughter named Mulan. Every time I say the name, people are going to think I named her after the movie. Like, I couldn't think of it like, oh, there's a Chinese name I can give her. And I am so not that way. So I said, well, I'll keep Mulan as a middle name and I'll name her Tara because I've just done a lot of traveling in China and in Tibet and Nepal. And Tara is this Buddhist goddess of compassion. And it's also an Irish name. So it just kind of made sense. So I named her Tara Mulan. But then when Mulan was about 3 and a half, she came up to me and said, I'm Mulan. And she looked at me like, you know, you can call me Tara, but I answer to Mulan.
That's
so,
it.
That's it. And then I thought, well, it is her name. So now even still, I have to go through. People say, your daughter's Mulan. Oh, interesting. Oh, interesting.
We as parents have these higher brain processes that just gets in the way of kid logic. Like in your book, you mentioned she's good at math, she's good at gymnastics, she's good at violin.
Right.
Which are three things that are not perhaps unassociated with Asian Americans.
I know. Well, I just talked, that's in my discrimination chapter. And I, or the race chapter, I guess. I'm just like, I'm musing on things. But people... I found people automatically, because she's Chinese, would think she was really smart. And I feel like that's just as much of a stereotype as anything else is.
It's definitely just as much stereotype.
Yeah, and I rebelled against it. So I found myself in this awkward position that, you know, where I would say, well, she's kind of smart. She's a, you know, normal, just in... she's an average person. And then I felt like
she's on the average spectrum.
She's average. And then I felt like other parents were looking at me like, why would you say that? You should just accept your daughter for who she is. And then I felt like I was in this awkward situation.
Yeah. And then the other thing, and this happened with me, the school tries to teach not to be racist, but in doing so, they introduce for the first time the concept of race.
Right. So, like, yes, they end up teaching racism. Well, for Mulan, it really just lasted a minute, but Mulan came home from school. She is at a complete multi-culti school, all races. It's like a Benetton ad, the school. And she never even notices race. She never has ever described somebody regarding race.
Right.
So she comes home and says, Mom, we're learning about Martin Luther King Day. Did you know that there are some people with really dark skin who are called black people, and that a lot of those people came here as slaves? And I go, yes, you know, I did know that. Isn't that terrible? And she goes, and did you know that some people don't like people who are like that, and they discriminate against them and even do terrible things to them? And I said, yes, I know. That's terrible. And she goes, oh, so glad I'm not black. And I go, oh, my God. So then I'm like,
Wrong conclusion.
And so then I have to sit and explain to her, and then she gets it eventually.
Yeah. I was reading a biography of Jackie Robinson. I have sons 4 and 6. And So I have to explain, well, Jackie Robinson was a great man. Why was he a great man? Well, he broke segregation. They don't know what segregation is.
Right.
So now I have to tell you the country you live in did this for all these years.
Right.
Is this really uplifting, or is this much more depressing to even know that it existed?
Well, it's really hard because you have to teach about the history to the kid, but then you want to get, you know, they're trying to learn to be smart and to fit in and to take advantage of the knowledge they have, which any human does.
Yes.
That's a normal thing. So they're looking at it two ways, like, oh, this is this terrible thing, but also how can I game the system to take advantage of this knowledge? I mean, I think that's a normal way to take the information. And when it comes to race, it becomes incredibly complicated about how to convey that information.
Yeah, and there's exactly, and there are a couple instances in the book where immediately you jump to a conclusion, or as parents, we always do this, oh my God, they're talking about sex, and you definitely just should answer the question they ask. You should
exactly.
Definitely not assume, like, I'm watching a basketball game with my son, and he asked me about why the black guys are doing this, and I said, well, they're you know, it's a mix on the team, and that guy on the bench, and I realized he meant the guys in the black jerseys. Why
oh my
the black
God.
Guys running?
That's really funny.
The name of the book is If It's Not One Thing, It's Your Mother. It's by Julia Sweeney. It's an interesting and fascinating read. There's a lot in the book that we haven't talked about today, and things about your brother who had addiction issues.
Yes.
And passed away, your prison phone pal who wasn't your brother, though your brother
right.
advised him on that. Was there a reason, like a real reason, why you had to get it down in this form? Because I know you've done This American Life, and you've been, you know, an actress in, and you do monologues, so why the memoir form?
Because I feel I do get on stage occasionally. For example, right now I'm doing these shows with Jill Sobule. We do this Jill and Julia show thing where she sings, I tell stories. But I'm really not interested in doing a monologue again. Like, I don't, it's too much work. It's too much drama. I like being home in my pajamas in my office typing on my computer. And so I figured I better become a good writer. So I kind of thought, I'm moving into books now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to learn how to be better at this and to get my comedy out clearly in writing, which is different than talking. And so I worked really hard on trying to just learn how to say it in words.
Well, you were on the staffs of TV shows like Desperate Housewives and so forth. And the book is kind of in the second person. What's technically the second person? Like, you will say you, and then you will say at one point, oh, let me loop back and explain why Tara is now named Mulan.
Right.
So there's definitely speaking to the audience in the book as if they were a live audience. Did you consciously try to read, say, Nora Ephron or great writers as you became a writer to try to get that
muscle
developed?
Oh, that's so funny you mentioned Nora Ephron,
yeah.
Because I'm not a fan of her films, but I am such a huge fan of her essays. I mean, and I always feel, and now that she's gone, I feel guilty that I didn't like the films, but I was like a really outspoken, not into the films. But I loved her essays. Like, to me, that's how I fell in love with her. And I've read all her books of collections of essays. I've read every essay that was in The New Yorker or wherever it was. And I didn't consciously do that, but I admire her style so much that I think it comes through.
Yes. And the one last thing I want to ask you about is the TED Talk. As an institution, you did one. I think, what did they do? Take a chunk of one of your monologues and turn it into a TED Talk, essentially?
No, I just went to TED and did 18 minutes from my monologue for Letting Go of God. And then I did a 3-minute bit of telling Mulan about the birds and the bees for them. And then I've done other little things for them.
So it's good. I will compliment the TED Talks by saying it's good that it's out there, but I'm suspicious of them as a form. I'm suspicious of that kind of microphone and the kind of pat answer. It's a little bit of a parable, and it always comes into, you know, some pat conclusion, like the end of Paul Harvey, and his name was Abraham Lincoln. It seems like so many of them are a little, I keep saying pat, but it seems a little too, it seems a little too easy, or, you know, the conclusions are maybe they flatter the audience into thinking, oh, you're this really sophisticated person, but then they give you a very kind of easy answer.
Well, I'm a big TED fan, and I know, and have been for years and years, and I've gone to the conferences for years and years, long before there was a website or anyone was filmed. So, I mean, it's almost like family. That doesn't mean I can't have a critical mind about it, but I can see that what they do is they really actively try to get people to hone their message to a simple idea that has a clear beginning, middle, and end, has components of, you know, like vulnerability and personality. And yes, it's manufactured. Because you're in this business, you see how the sausage is made too much probably. But I will say, and I'm not trying to say this like the dumb average American, that is not true. But I think for most people who aren't in this business of doing that, it's a better way to get the information across than a complicated idea that doesn't come to some clear conclusion. And that's what I think they've really been genius at with TED.
Okay, you've turned me
around. So I've defended them.
No, it's a good defense. It's just like, why are movies always on the same structure? Well, there's something about storytelling that responds to the, you know, A, B, C structure.
And even though I'm all for breaking that, but I can see there's a lot of people that would never get their message, really important messages, if they weren't sort of honed by the TED people to make it a clear, simple message.
And so let's just say, they're a great part of the ongoing dialogue, them and the moth, and memoirs like If It's Not One Thing, It's Your Mother,
bless your heart,
by Julia Sweeney. It is a Simon & Schuster book. Julia Sweeney will be in conversation with the very funny Judy Gold.
I know, I can't wait.
Tonight at 8:15 at the 92nd Street Y. For more information, visit our show page. Julia, thank you so much.
Thank
it was great
you.
Talking
You're
to
so
you.
Great. Thank you.